Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
How are you doing, Ben?
I'm good. You know, after the ridiculous success of that last time I opened some Star Trek cards, I'm kind of tempted to open some more. They're sitting here right next to me.
I was going to say, like, today's episode is Season 2, Episode 7, Unnatural Selection.
And it was presaged by these cards.
Yeah. It was predicted by the magic cards that I got you off of eBay. It kind of freaks me out.
Did you, like, promise your firstborn son to the gypsy that sold you them on eBay?
Yeah, look, I mean...
Excuse me, Romani, I'm sorry.
I hit a gypsy in a crosswalk with my car, and as I
don't recommend that, Adam.
Yeah, ordinarily, I would have just kept on driving,
yeah.
as I do most of the time. But I stopped, and I tried to help her. She was dying in my arms, and she looked at me, and she said, podcast.
So this show is your curse made manifest, huh?
It is, yeah. And you get to live in it with me for some reason.
I never did anything but use a kind of offensive ethnic epithet like gypsy in a public forum.
God, that was a mouthful.
I really regret that. Okay, I've got five new cards.
All right.
One of them is for an episode called Aquiel. It's like a...
What are we looking at?
Pink circle with an eye at the top and a hand at the bottom. I don't remember this episode. The Enterprise arrives near a remote subspace relay station, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I'm already asleep reading the back of this card. Next one is a picture of Data being shocked by some electricity, and it's for an episode called Disaster.
Oh, that's fun.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I think these are all for episodes. The next one is for an episode called Transfigurations.
Uh-huh.
That might be coming up in season 3.
Yeah.
It's like a...
There are no spoilers you're looking at, right? Like, they aren't giving too much away when you just look at the image?
Not as far as I can tell.
Well, that's good.
Let's see. Manhunt. Did we watch this episode? En route to the Pacifica conference? Weren't they talking about... Yeah.
It was one of those great conference episodes that we've done.
Oh, this is the Troy episode with Troy's mom.
Sure is.
I think this is like dog versus lizard people or whatever. What did we?
Oh, that's right. Fish versus dog.
Yeah. unfortunately, the trading card really doesn't illuminate any of that. I'm not even sure who it is. It might be Picard in profile with kind of a weird psychedelic pattern.
God. And, you know, if they ever do another version of these cards, I wonder if this show will get a special card.
Oh, insert. I would sign. I
would sign until my signing hand was stiff and claw-like.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
My last card here is for an episode called The Outcast, which I do remember. This is that episode where they're at a planet where gender doesn't exist, like there's no male-female divide, and Riker gets down with one of the members of the society.
Awesome.
And
he does a little diplomatic relations.
Mm-hmm. A deep diplomatic relations, if you know what I mean.
It's like...
I guess it would have to be the butt, right? If you don't have a gender, like, you probably don't have a...
Yeah, as far as I know, a butthole is genderless.
Yeah.
You know, you could be describing any one of, like, 60 episodes of this show by just, by just the log line, Riker engages in diplomatic relations with an alien species.
Yeah, that is a fair point.
He doesn't quite get near any of that in this episode, though.
No.
Unless he's attracted to olds, which he has not demonstrated that predilection. So far.
I mean, I don't think Riker is super, super selective. I think he kind of takes all comers, but...
Yeah, they all feel the same on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. That might have been the worst thing I've ever said on this show.
Oh, I've said worse.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This episode starts with Picard captain logging, and his observation about this mission that like they have zero details on is that he hopes it will help him evaluate his new chief medical officer more, which is maybe the dumbest thing I've ever heard in a captain's log. Because it's like, do we really need that setup? Do we need to set up that this is going to be a Pulaski episode, or can we just have the episode?
It might be that that they're sort of doing the viewer a favor, telegraphing that this is a Pulaski episode right off the top. Like,
yeah, like if you don't care, you can check out now.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead and do something else with your Sunday evening. Just come back next week.
That's an awesome little feint on the writer's part. But like, like he says they literally know nothing about this mission other than that they like need to be some specific place. And then he says that he hopes it allows him to evaluate his chief medical officer. It's like, it's not like it, we're on a medical mission of mercy or anything like that. It's like I have no idea what's going on, but I sure hope the doctor becomes involved in it somehow.
Irrespective of the mission, I'm going to keep my eye on you. Like, okay. So as the mission begins, the Enterprise receives a distress call from what we learn is the USS Lantry, a ship that should be super familiar to you, Ben, as such a big fan of the second Star Trek movie. It's sort of like a Reliant-looking ship.
It's definitely whatever the class of ship that Reliant is. Sort of, yeah. Makes me wonder, like, how long these ships are in service for.
They say this one was a cargo ship, and I feel like if it's a cargo ship, like, maybe they're using older ships for that service.
Oh, they, like demilitarize older ships?
That would seem that way.
Yeah, like, that makes sense.
Because at the time of the second movie, like, this was a sort of a badass ship.
Right.
It was pretty great. But I imagine they just stripped it out, and now they're using it for moving cargo around, which is the picture we get in the description that Data gives as to what sort of ship class this is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the cargo ship you picture when you hear the phrase cargo ship, but your little headcanon works for me.
Glad it's working for someone.
So shit is not great on the Lantry because they use like special Starfleet codes. Maybe the same codes that they used on the Reliant in Wrath of Khan. So they hack into the mainframe and they're able to get a look at the bridge of the ship, and everybody is dead of old age, seemingly. I think that I think it's Riker that says it.
Looks like they had a battle with time.
And Worf tosses in.
And lost.
God, that ship must smell so bad. Like, the ship smelled really bad before everyone died.
Mm-hmm.
That old person smell.
Oh, yeah.
And just hangs in the air.
Yeah.
Just like soup.
You know, coughing without covering their mouths and always unwrapping hard candies and really noisy plastic wrappers. It's like, just,
they roll up to the Lantry and their turn signal is on.
Yeah.
Like, just clicking.
You know, they look at the bridge. There are canasta games that weren't even finished when they pass. There are 1,000-piece puzzles that are, you know, 3/4 finished and they'll never be finished.
There's a cat puzzle that will never be finished. It's a sad scene.
Yeah, so sad. so there's a mystery afoot, and they start looking into like what could have caused this. I guess
they've been.
Yeah, the ship shipped out 8 weeks ago. Full complement was given a clean bill of health. One of the officers had a case of the Thalusian flu, but had been cleared to ship out. And I think Pulaski says the Thalusian flu is normal rhinovirus, nothing, no big whoop.
Yeah, certainly not anything that's going to kill anyone.
So then they're like, well, they must have picked something up at whatever the last place they were at, which is a genetic research station on Gagarin 4. And And so they're like, well, we got to go check that out. We're not going to leave this death ship here. So they erect a quarantine buoy to warn off other ships, and they...
They just turn on its hazard lights.
Yeah. And they jet off to Gagarin 4, which is also putting out a distress call, as luck would have it. And they get on FaceTime with a very old lady.
We've just declared a medical emergency here. We need your help.
This science officer who gets on the blower with them makes it pretty clear that that she's a 30-year-old woman, but what we're seeing is a real grandma on screen.
Yeah, I mean, she says that she's supposed to be in her 30s, but she and Dr. Pulaski really have, like, top-notch old lady phone manners. like Pulaski pipes up in the midst of the call, and this scientist lady down on the service goes, "Excuse me, to whom am I speaking?" And I feel like she kind of shows her hand, like, maybe you aren't 35 after all, lady.
Yeah, and all in the background, like, the background action is a bunch of white hairs, like, in V-neck sweaters. Like, like they might be suffering from some kind of virus, but I feel like they're also embracing it, too, a little bit. Like, this is finally a reason for them to go shopping at, like, Chico's.
Yeah. Having dinner at 4:30 p.m. is actually kind of nice. And the bargains.
I like waking up first thing in the morning. That's a great start on my day.
You know, Pinochle is a really interesting game when you get down to it.
It's handrails everywhere and, like, the lower peephole on the door.
Right.
And this is definitely that sort of facility.
So the scientist lady is pretty concerned about the safety of the children that they are doing research on here, because she's positive that they don't have any, they don't pose any risk to the Enterprise, but they've had to quarantine their own facility. And so Picard convenes a little conference in the conference room to discuss, like, the risks that they're about to start taking. Cause the scientist lady, Dr. Kingsley, is pretty hell-bent on getting these children off of the planet's surface. So Troy weighs in and she says she's not lying about... I mean, she believes that the kids are not a threat, but she's also not really telling the truth about something. They decide, like, they're going to put up a force field and beam the kid up in... what do they call it? Carbonite? Yeah, carbonite.
Yeah, they definitely beam this child up in carbonite. On a special bed with a shield around it.
Yeah, and when they beam him up, it's like a 23-year-old male underwear model, and that freaks Worf out really bad.
He looks exactly like your Star Trek baseball card, because that's the same guy, right?
Same guy, yeah. I have a signed baseball card from a male underwear model in my house.
You should put that on your nightstand.
It's gonna inspire a lot of sexual encounters from here on out. I can only hope.
Yeah, that really, like, breaking into production a little bit, that had to be really uncomfortable for that actor, because it's basically a plastic cowl that covers his entire body.
Yeah, can't have been. It's got to have been pretty hot under that thing.
Yeah, I want to know more about how they did that. I just couldn't find anything in my research.
So Pulaski gets to scanning and she kind of, you know, says, decides that he's healthy and he doesn't have any pathogens, and he's got a really advanced immune system to boot. So she doesn't feel like he's really a threat of any kind. And so she starts lobbying the captain to let her unfreeze him from the carbonite. And
Troy gets a hit that he's an empath too, right?
Oh yeah,
like from the bedside, she's like, "Huh? Well, I'm actually getting something from him, even though he's in this shielding."
I neglected to mention that. I'm sorry, Adam.
Well, I'm just trying to help. That's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Instead of constantly interrupting you, I will occasionally offer some helpful information.
I don't think you constantly interrupt me, though. I feel like that's you being sensitive about something.
I do.
Okay. Well. So she wants to unfreeze him, and the captain's pretty dead set against it because he doesn't want to put the ship at further risk. So she discusses this with Geordi, and they come up with the idea of going on a shuttlecraft that has left the ship and unfreezing him there. And the captain is prepared to agree with that situation. So,
kind of a cool idea. Like, you got a mini starship. Why don't you just park it on the outside and do your test out there?
Yeah. So they go out there, Data pilots, because obviously he's going to be immune to this, unlike the disease that got everybody drunk in Drunk Shimoda episode.
Right.
You know, they just know. They just know he's going to be immune to it, which is great.
They seem to really, like, throw him into dangerous situations, just assuming he's going to be all right, even though he is the most precious commodity in the entire Starfleet.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely irreplaceable. But they're constantly, like, walking him through fire, sending him on ships about to explode.
Yeah, sending him to time warp planets where lasers are going to shoot at him.
Yeah. They really don't seem to care about him at all.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing, because his feelings won't be hurt anyway.
He doesn't give a shit. So she unfreezes him, and he pops up and grabs her arm and starts telepathing with her, which is, I feel like, a great way that the show's producers found to not pay George Baxter for having any lines, even though
Holy
they got
shit.
Him into his underpants.
That's why he's uncredited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Not a speaking part, even though it's essentially a nudity part.
Look, George Baxter, we're going to get you down into your skivvies. You're not going to have a single line, but trust me when I tell you, you will become famous in 20 years for a Star Trek baseball card that you'll have to sign. He's like, deal. That sounds great.
What do you think he must have been paid to sign some cards, right?
That would seem to be his only payment for his involvement in this show.
Well, that and his upcoming appearance at Greatest Gen Con, in which he'll be going deep into some of the negotiations that his management failed to engage in with the producers of Star Trek The Next Generation.
I hope he's retained that same management, because I think we could negotiate with them pretty well. Like, I think our chances are good of getting him on the con.
Yeah, you don't change horses midstream.
We want to make sure that he's recognized at Greatest Gen Con, so I think if he shows up just wearing underwear, that'd be ideal for everyone, I think.
Yeah, not a tidy-whitey, but like a white boxer brief would be great.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So this winds up starting to be kind of a big episode for Chief O'Brien, who goes down to sick bay to supervise beaming him off the ship, and then is tasked with reconfiguring the transporter, because not long after Pulaski has this guy unfrozen, does she come down with the exact same condition.
Arthritic inflammation is the initial symptom of the disease.
Which is holding up the people down on the planet.
Yeah, the first symptom of the virus is arthritic joint pain and a real need for some soft food. Like a real hunger.
Yeah.
For some applesauce.
Yeah. Not too spicy. So they're like, they're pretty excited about this idea that they can just beam her back to the ship and filter out whatever changed about her by referencing the pattern buffer on, you know, on the last time she beamed. But
yeah, the idea being is that they use the last scan of her body when she was healthy, comp it against the one that she's got right now,
right.
And then like the
subtract
there be
out
some
the difference.
Cancellation. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. It's like multiplying fractions.
Yeah. So that's a great idea, except for Pulaski is a transportophobe and has never been on the transporter on the Enterprise, and the last ship she was on scrubbed her transporter records from the few times that she did it there, and so they don't have a bio pattern to work with.
It's as if the TSA has been throwing away all of our nude X-rays throughout the years.
Oh, that would be such a shame.
I don't believe that's happened either.
Yeah. So she and Data take the shuttle down to the planet surface. And they get to work with these scientists trying to come up with something that explains this horrible illness, because they don't think it can be coming from the children, but they don't really have any kind of understanding of what is causing it. And
yeah, the chief scientist is like, check out our experiments on children. Look at how advanced they are. And they're like moving shit with their minds.
Yeah.
They're playing three-dimensional chess without touching any of the pieces. They're all like really good looking.
Yeah, well, like that's like a J. Crew catalog waiting to happen.
It's some real like final solutioneering.
Yeah.
You know, of like master race genetics. She basically cops to it. She's like, we genetically modified people into perfect people, and here they are.
Yeah. I mean, now that you're pointing this out, she really is like a space Mengele. Like she is fully doing some sick human experimentation to like purify genetics.
She doesn't seem to grok how upsetting that idea is to anyone else.
Perfect in every way. Their body structure, their musculature, their minds.
She's like, well, yeah, that's totally what we're doing. It's our whole mission for being.
Yeah. She has that kind of oblivious old lady quality that's typical of 35-year-old women.
You know, like, for as science fiction as this show is, it's sort of amazing how often the problem in a particular episode has to do with science, to the degree that, like, are we sure that this is a pro-science show? Makes me feel like sometimes this is an anti-science science fiction show.
That happens sometimes. I mean, that was true of Jurassic Park in a lot of ways.
It sure seems like here, nature found a way.
That your Goldblum?
Yeah. A very terrible Goldblum. So, meanwhile, back up on the ship, they're trying to work out a solution because it seems like at the rate of aging that Pulaski's going through, she is just turning more and more leathery with every minute. Like,
yeah.
Like sag on top of sag on top of sag.
She's being aged rapidly by the makeup department, and it's getting ugly. Like they're bringing the same level of skill to bear that they brought in the episode with the de-aging admiral, and it's not nice to look at.
God, and I think we mentioned this a little bit at the end of the last episode, but how must it feel to be a legitimate old person on the show as an actor?
Yeah,
and be sitting next to someone in the makeup trailer being aged via makeup. And they're like swinging you both around into the mirror going, hey, you guys look the same, right? Like, ugh. While we might not be sure if this is like an anti-science or pro-science show, it is most definitely anti-old people.
Yeah, for sure.
My love is a fever.
So the captain gets this idea that if they can... You know, they don't have any transporter pattern to work with to save Pulaski. But what if they got some DNA? Could they just use that as like a piece of comparative information?
Right. And that is a really exciting notion because it sends them off into a search for Pulaski DNA.
Right.
So they like rifle through her apartment.
Yeah. This is Riker and Data pulling all the drawers open, looking at her under things.
They're doing that Dateline NBC thing where they're like using a black light, going around her condo trying to find something.
Yeah.
I doubt Riker would be okay with this sort of thing happening in his quarters.
No. He might have the only lock on any door in the whole ship.
I think you'd have to believe that the black light would be malfunctioning if you tried to use it in his room. Like,
it's blinding.
I'm only getting one color. Like, there's no differentiation here. This thing is broken.
Yeah. Also, how come your bed sheets are stiff as a board?
Yeah, it's like the box a refrigerator came in.
I broke his bath towel over my knee.
These socks are like sticks.
I've never seen a sock that stands up on its own.
Oh, I'm stuck to this chair. So they finally find a hair in the hairbrush with a follicle in it, and boom.
Live DNA.
There you go. That's how DNA works, right?
It sure does, Adam. We take the hair and replicate the doctor. Dino DNA.
The hairbrush being, of course, the amber that the mosquito, which in this example is the hair follicle, has been trapped in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All checks out.
So they take that back to O'Brien, and O'Brien, like, has one of the funniest pieces of dialogue that I think I've heard in the entire series so far. It might as well be written in a foreign language. It's amazing. They're spitballing ideas, and they finally come up with this whole idea using Pulaski's DNA, and they're like, well, Chief, can you do it? And he's like,
well, I'd have to get into the biofilter bus and patch in a molecular matrix reader. That's no problem. But the waveform modulator will be overloaded without the regeneration limiter in the first stage circuit.
O'Brien is kind of flexing. He's like, you know, I'm transporter chief, but I'm looking at Geordi, you know. He's not gonna be chief engineer forever. Let me show the captain what I've got.
That's what I thought too. This is gonna be given away at this point, but this was my Shimoda moment, was O'Brien going, I'm gunning for a promotion and this is how I do it. Like, I'm going to have a great idea that's not going to make any sense to anyone. Here you go. And Picard's like, yeah, do it. I have no idea what you meant, but go ahead.
Sounds like a good idea. What was your name again?
You're that guy that stands in here by himself every day for weeks at a time, right?
Yeah, except for in this episode, O'Brien has like a lackey.
That's right. Yeah, who is creepy as hell.
Yeah, that guy is super date rapey.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are two actors in this episode that don't have a single word, but yet occupy, you know, a pretty large amount of the episode. One of them's underwear guy, and the other one is O'Brien's assistant.
So they've beamed, obviously beamed Data up by now, and so now they're going to beam up the doctor, and Picard comes into the transporter room for the big event, and O'Brien is like, just by the way, this is like a one-time deal. Like, if we get her into the pattern buffer and we're detecting that it's like old Pulaski, there's no beaming her back down to the planet. Like, we got to disperse her pattern into space. Like, there's nothing there, you know, because this is all jerry-rigged together like this, there's no turning back once we start. And the captain's like, then I will take the job of doing it. And O'Brien's like, thanks, dude. That's awesome. And
yeah, and it really goes down like that, too. Like it is extremely understood between them that O'Brien doesn't want the job of the mercy killing.
No.
And Picard is all too happy to do it because he hates Pulaski.
Yeah. You know, that I think is most evidenced by the fact that he does not then radio down to Pulaski and explain this to her. He's just like, all right, let's get this going.
Like, let's fire this thing up.
Yeah. So they start beaming her up, and it's like, it's played for some tension. Like, they kind of fade in and out between super old Pulaski and just pretty old Pulaski. And
standard issue old Pulaski.
Yeah. Bone stock old Pulaski. But
she's got some miles on her.
Yeah. Those are city miles, Adam, you know?
She's a pit woofy, like, that does not qualify for the warranty.
Yeah, but they beam her aboard, and she checks out. So we are stuck with her for the rest of the season.
Yeah, pretty big disappointment probably to a lot of people.
Damok and Jalad at Tanagra.
So they warp off to where the Lantry is, and there's a very somber moment at the end of this episode where everybody stands up on the ship and they have a little moment of silence, and then they nuke the Lantry, thus saving everybody from this genetic disease. And I guess we didn't even explain what the disease was, did we?
Insofar as we just explained it as a disease that ages people in an accelerated manner.
It comes out that because these kids are so genetically advanced, their immune systems have like attacked this Thalusian flu that this guy had so much that they're rewriting the genetic code of everybody that comes in contact with it, and therefore aging them up. So I just wanted to make sure that got in there.
Yeah, and, you know, in addition to destroying the Lantry and scattering 200 cans of soup into space, they also needed to quarantine that lab.
Was that a Ted Cruz joke?
No, I think it was just an old person joke.
Oh, because Ted Cruz is famous for having bought 200 cans of soup.
God, I just, yeah, that number wasn't significant outside of that bit of trivia. Yeah, it has nothing to do with Ted Cruz, thank God.
Yeah.
So they quarantine the kids on the planet, too. Like, their fate is to spend the rest of their lives alone and then die, I guess, because they can never come in contact with any humans, because their biological defenses would just kill them the way they killed everyone else.
Yeah, and that is pretty brutal. Although I think these kids are probably sharp enough to come up with a way of fixing that, right?
I think they're extremely dangerous, and if they were smart, they should truck on back to the planet and use a few more of those torpedoes on the base.
Yeah. I mean, there's no telling what will happen, though, if a photon torpedo comes in contact with that many orthopedic shoes.
Sir, our phasers cannot possibly penetrate that many shawls. Sir, I'm reading a massive surge of energy. It appears that 200 Craftmatic adjustable beds have been operated all at once.
Our systems can't possibly power that many hover-rounds.
Oh, man. One of my favorite parts of this episode was, so Pulaski hatches the plan to use a shuttlecraft as her sick bay, as her mobile sick bay.
Yeah.
She and Data go into the shuttle bay and see the most janky looking shuttlecraft I think has ever been on the show. It looks like what a shuttlecraft looks like if a bunk bed race car looks like a race car. Like, it's that equivalent. Like, yeah. It's a totally squared off model. Like, you can tell it was never meant to be shot. It was meant to be shot like in the far distance.
Yeah.
It looks like a fucking cardboard box.
Well, they have two kinds of shuttlecraft on this show. There's the kind that they only show in space or in like a rendering.
Which is like the Toyota Previa like minivan version of the shuttlecraft. Like, it looks like a jelly bean with warp nacelles. It's great.
Right. But then there's the other kind, which is the plywood junker that they actually show people getting in and out of, and those are always the squared off pieces of shit.
Yeah, this was totally like shuttlecraft jalopy.
Yeah,
but of course, like, I think that's a good idea. You want to give her the beater because you aren't sure if it's gonna get all that virus on the inside of it.
Oh, but she leaves the ship on a nice one.
Yeah, I think that's a continuity error, you know.
Yeah, you might be right.
As you were watching, did you come across any Drunk Shimoda figures?
Incredible! Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, so Drunk Shimoda is the award we give any character who's doing something silly or hilarious to us. And I think I'm going to give this one once again to Picard, just for a little moment when... So he got on FaceTime at a certain point with the captain of the USS Repulse, which savvy viewers will recognize as the ship that Pulaski transferred from in episode 1 of season 2. And the captain on that ship lets slip that Pulaski is like kind of obsessed with Captain Picard and knew his whole service record and was really excited to come work on the Enterprise. And this is after they've had a lot of conflict and, you know, she's really kind of attempted to big dog him several times. And Captain Picard's reaction to getting this news that Pulaski is obsessed with him is so funny.
Extraordinary.
He just says, extraordinary. And really winces as he says it. Like, it just really made me laugh.
He winces because the actor Patrick Stewart knows how shitty of a line of dialogue that is for that exact moment. Like, it's almost like... it's ego masturbation if we're going to take that scene as true. Like he's really turned on by the idea that Pulaski is so into him, right?
Oh,
like from a professional standpoint.
I took it as much the opposite, Adam. I really thought that his performance was that really creeped him out.
Oh, wow. Well, we took it completely different ways.
Well, it's funny either way.
Yeah, it is. As I said before, Chief O'Brien is definitely my drunk Shimoda for this episode.
Yeah. Like, going for that instinct, big promo.
Yeah, the instinct to brag, like that word salad that he just sort of bombed out into the transporter room. Like,
yeah.
You can't just do that.
Yeah, nobody is going to be able to check the math on technobabble like that, you know?
Yeah, you're chief because we trust you. Go do your chiefing.
Yeah. I just want a yes or no answer to my question. I am the cutest of all.
There are four lights. What do we have coming up on the next episode?
Our next episode is Season 2, Episode 8, A Matter of Honor. Riker's loyalties are put to the test when he's assigned to a Klingon vessel, which plans to attack the Enterprise. Do you remember this one, Adam?
This one is one of the more memorable episodes of the whole series, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
This is like Klingon Exchange Program.
Yeah, and
it's
like,
awesome.
And like, I feel like really establishes some parts of the Klingon mythos that haven't heretofore been established, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Riker kick some ass on a Klingon ship.
Yeah, you gotta kick some ass if you're on a Klingon ship. It's required.
He's over there to eat some gawk and grab some ass, and he's all out of gawk.
Oh, he's not out of gawk. There's plenty of gawk to go around.
All right, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. That just about wraps us up. You can comment about this episode and all of our episodes on Twitter. Use the hashtag GreatestGen, which is a great way to connect with other people that listen to the show and us. I check it 50 times a day, every single day.
If you like the old people from the episode we just saw, there's also plenty of old people using the hashtag GreatestGen.
And like public health organizations tweeting that you shouldn't be a medication mixture statistic. A literal tweet that I saw the other day using the hashtag GreatestGen.
I'm so glad that that's our hashtag. It's so great. It's one of the best decisions we've ever made. Absolutely.
100%, Adam.
Yeah, so in addition to the hashtag, you've got me and Ben. I'm at Cut for Time. He's at Benjamin R, AHR. Don't forget, our music and our interstitial music is by one Dark Materia. You can find the Picard song everywhere songs exist on the internet. That's how popular this song is.
That is true. Much more popular than our show, I'll put it that way.
Yep.
Please go to iTunes and leave us a nice review.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
It would be great. Nice. If we had as many reviews as we have listeners, we'd have a lot more listeners.
Yeah, we'd have like 40 reviews. It'd be great.
That's like a Buddhist cone. Am I using that right? I don't think I am.
You're going to get about 200 emails if you didn't, so let's find out.
So, drunkshimoda@gmail.com if you want to correct me about my feeble understanding of Eastern religions, or if you just want to talk to us about anything Star Trek related. With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and another episode of The Greatest Generation that talks about it.
That's exactly what we've done here.
All right, Adam. Later.
It does what it says on the tin. Bye, guys.
It does. It's embarrassed, and it is about Star Trek.
See ya.
MaximumFun.org.